Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. In a special two-hour Frontline, James Blumel provides an inside look at how people lived and how lives were changed in Iraq with the premiere of Frontline's new investigation, Once Upon a Time in Iraq. Iraqis share personal accounts of life living under Saddam Hussein, the U.S.-led invasion of their country in the 17 years that followed. You'll hear about sectarian violence and the rise of ISIS from the people who have survived it. Once Upon a Time in Iraq premieres tomorrow night on Frontline, 8 Central, 7 Mountain on SDPB-TV. Joining us this morning is BAFTA award-winning documentary maker James Blumel. He filmed and directed Once Upon a Time in Iraq. James, welcome to In the Moment. Thank you for being here.
Oh, well, thanks for having me on.
This is a riveting and heartbreaking story as we meet these people, and I'm wondering how long you have known some of the people that are featured in this program.
How long have I known them? Well, I didn't know any of them until I started to make the documentary. The documentary took about 2 years, so I guess I've known them for about 2 years.
2 years, and hearing these stories of how much has been unfolding. This, some of them, you know, start with telling stories of when they were children living under the regime of Saddam Hussein. Some are young adults at the time. Some are parents. Tell me what some of them said about life with Saddam Hussein in charge. What was it like to live during that time? What was it like to have opinions about Saddam Hussein, for example?
Yeah, so much in Iraq is a contradiction. So, whatever I say now, someone can say completely the opposite. But in general, Saddam Hussein, if you lived under Saddam Hussein, there were benefits for sure. And those benefits were that he provided peace and security from everything else except for him. And you knew where the line was. If you criticized the Ba'ath Party or if you criticized him by name, you knew you were going to get into trouble, serious trouble. If you didn't and you stepped away from that, Iraq was a high-functioning society. It was secular, mainly, and good women's rights and high employment, bar the sanctions that they were suffering. But it was a safe place if you knew your limits. And those limits were do not criticize or cross Saddam. If you did, you're dead. That disappeared. That level of security and that level of order disappeared when he was removed.
Let's talk about some of the people who tell their stories in this frontline. Waleed Nassif, I'm not sure if I'm saying his name right, but this is a guy who loves heavy metal, who is really looking forward once he starts hearing about the U.S. invasion. He is, as he says, pro-war. I'm infatuated with the West. And as soon as he has the opportunity, he becomes a translator for journalists. Tell me a little bit about his journey, because it goes from enthusiasm to really being under very immediate threat.
Yeah, it's sad in so many ways. Waleed is someone that like you say, he was infatuated with the West. He said that himself. He was a lead singer in a heavy metal band under Saddam Hussein. He was, there was a heavy metal band in those times. Who would have thought? And that's another example of the sort of freedom that they had under Saddam. I mean, you wouldn't have that under an Islamic sort of government, but under Saddam, that was kind of tolerated as long again if you didn't criticize Saddam Hussein. So when the opportunity to get rid of Saddam Hussein and replace him with what Waleed saw as a true functioning democracy with all the freedoms that America could offer, he wanted it. So many of them wanted it. That's like a dream for him. He says in the film, he's heard that, he's heard people saying, I can't quite remember what he says exactly in the film, so I'm not going to quote him. But that's what he was motivated by. He wanted Iraq to become a country like America. And when that didn't happen, when what was delivered was something, vastly different to the freedoms that Americans enjoyed. Not only did that put him in danger, but that made him disillusioned to the point of becoming a U-turn, like an enemy of America. Not that he is an active enemy of America, but he fell out of love with the country so much that he was completely disillusioned by it. And he should have been a shoo-in. People like that should have been a shoo-in to build a functioning democracy for Iraq, because people like that wanted it. And it was those people that were alienated.
The American troops roll in and the statues of Saddam Hussein are torn down. Saddam Hussein disappears for a while. He's missing. The people sort of think he is immortal and are waiting to see what happens. And there is an expectation that now that the Americans have arrived, good things are going to happen. People take to the streets. And instead, very shortly, things descend into chaos and looting and violence. Why does that happen? What did the people who lived through it tell you about why there was such chaos, such a short time after Saddam Hussein is really out of power?
Yeah, I mean, I can only tell you what people told me. You know, I don't know exactly what happened. But what I think sort of happened from the interviews that I've done with people is that when that pressure valve is released, you know, when it's like having a strict father, and you go away for the weekend, and you can do anything you want, you go a bit crazy. It was that, and the looting was a reaction to the new freedoms that everyone had. Trouble was, it wasn't freedom; it was chaos that was delivered, and there's a big difference between those two thoughts.
And regardless of what from the West, you know, from the United States or from other Western nations sort of thought they should have expected, what they did expect was, you know, some hope, some electricity, some water, dignity, the hope of getting a job, and that hope kind of disappears. What rises up in its place very quickly?
What rises up in its place is anger. And because it feels, I think people felt that there was a semblance of order under Saddam, and with all the might and power of America, they can't fix the electricity problems. You know, and after you know, everyone expects maybe a couple of months of chaos and disorder, but when there's no attempt, and the months and months go on and on and on, and there is no police force, and murder is rocketing, and these streets that used to be incredibly safe to walk down are now the most dangerous streets in the world, and now your family is being targeted by gangsters and being hit in the crossfire as insurgents come in, and the country descends into chaos. People lost all faith in the fact that America can deliver Iraq to be that society, to be that promised land of a stable society and a democracy. They lost faith in the American project.
We see the rise of Al-Qaeda and then the rise of ISIS. And as the ISIS, the black flag of ISIS kind of replaces the Iraqi flag, lives change even more drastically. There was an interview with a woman, Tahani, I think her name is, talking about what it's like to be a woman and go from one thing to suddenly being a part of the Islamic State. Tell me a little bit about what transitioned. What did the women tell you happened in their worlds? How much changed for them with the rise of ISIS?
Oh, my God. I mean, it's even difficult to sort of, you know, sum up the change. But if you imagine a relatively sort of safe secular society, which was you know, Saddam's Iraq, bar all the torture and everything he did to keep it safe, where women were in positions of power and had jobs and were respected in that way, suddenly to be launched into a society where they were stoned to death if they didn't cover up properly, you know, to the point where it was safer for Tahani, for example. She didn't want to leave her house, and she stayed inside her house for 2.5 years because it was just too dangerous for her to go outside. Living under ISIS was something which it must have been it just must have been unbearable. I mean, I was sitting through ISIS material trying to make this documentary, and it's just an ordeal to have to sit through this material, which is filmed because they were proud of it. They're proud of the fact they cut people's hands off for smoking. They're proud of the fact they threw homosexuals off buildings. They're proud of the fact that they crucified people. They're proud of all this stuff. And that was daily routine for the people that lived under ISIS. If you didn't have an execution that day, it was a weird day.
Right. And you talked to a man who was on death row for being with ISIS, and he explained sort of what the appeal was. And one of the big appeals for him was really financial security. There's not a lot of economic opportunity. He needs a job. He needs something to believe in. Not a lot of awareness there that what was behind it was so founded on destruction.
Well, to a certain point, that's all really relatable to you. I thought, you know, it's when you don't have anything, when you feel like you're you don't have an active role in society, you don't have a voice, and you don't have a sort of not even a foothold. If you've got nothing, then someone comes along and says, you know, I'll give you all those things. I'll make you an important person. The immediate effect for that man that joined ISIS, what he told me, was that he was walking down the street, he was a shepherd, and no one looked at him twice. Everyone ignored him. Suddenly, when he joined ISIS, people gave him respect. And you think, that's out of a Scorsese film. That's a very relatable reason to join ISIS. Where it becomes much less relatable is when you go along and you do the sort of things that they do. That's where it goes into territory which I can't even begin to understand how he could follow those rules. And I mean, he was telling me how much, I don't even want to go into it, really. It just gets way, way, way dark. But the initial reason to join is sort of relatable. That I had nothing and now I've got something.
Yeah. There's so much in this front line. We see the Obama administration, the George W. Bush administration, the Trump administration. There's politics, but what's really, really compelling about this is these everyday people who struggle to survive, and their acts of survival, their acts of defiance, the things that they could do nothing about. It's astonishing work. James, thank you so much for bringing just a small conversation to us today, and I hope everybody tunes in to see Once Upon a Time in Iraq. Great work. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye.